powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Welcome in, Tom, Jake, and Stacy. We are down at T-Mobile Park for the day. We're going to be catching up with Mariners GM Jerry Dipoto. Catcher Tom Murphy coming up at 12:30. By the way, Jerry Dipoto will be at 2, and we'll also be speaking with Justin Dunn. Stacy, I got to tell you right off the bat here, being down here, I haven't been down in this area of town in a while. Being at the park today, which we're looking at, by the way, there's no grass on the field.
Everything looks sepia toned.
Right. It looks what?
Sepia tone?
Sepia?
Isn't it sepia?
I don't know. You and kids and your colors. I don't know.
Sepia tone.
It looks like
sepia?
A bunch of sod
sepia
down
tone?
There.
It's a sepia tone.
What it looks like, though, is everything is kind of like a muted color. There's no grass on the field. Everything's being primed and ready.
Right. It just feels different down here. And, you know, when you start to talk to some of the people around here and a lot of the new players, new faces we're going to be seeing, thinking about some of the players that have been here the last couple of years who will no longer be here, I just want to say straight up, you're getting a brand new Mariner product this year. Both starting, you know, just with the park, there's a lot of different features being added to your experience when you come down here, to the on-field product, which of course includes all the players, guys like Evan White and Kyle Lewis, who we saw a bunch from last year. He tore it up in September. I'll just tell you, we taped our interview with Justin Dunn. He is an he's an electrifying kid.
He's fun.
He really is. I mean, if nothing else, you will gravitate toward these players. They've got, especially for baseball players, they've got great, great personalities.
I was going to say, there's a different demeanor a lot of the times in a football locker room versus an MLB clubhouse. Not with every position and every guy, but I think just in general. And I think the one thing about having an especially young team, which the Mariners will have this year, is you get a lot of guys that are just really hungry and eager, and, you know, they're just excited to be here, which is a lot of what you get when you talk to NFL rookies, because they don't have, you know, a farm system they go through. It's straight from college to the NFL, and all of a sudden you got to be hyped and ready and you're excited. And it's so interesting to see that from so many guys that we'll talk to today.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, obviously it's different with the Seahawks because they have an established team. Young players there are fighting for jobs. They compete with each other to take jobs, right? Here with the Mariners, all of these players have opportunities. I mean, we just got the news a second ago that Mitch Haniger now has a core injury. It came as a result of the surgery to repair his ruptured testicle. He's going to be out for 6 to 8 weeks. And, you know, I don't want to be insensitive to Mitch, but what does that do? That opens the door for guys like Jake Fraley and Braden Bishop, who are probably going to be competing for an extra outfield spot anyway, to take that spot. The opportunities are here. They're plentiful for all these young guys.
And for anyone wondering about that timeline, the Mariners right now, and they just kind of found out about this, it's new news.
Yep.
They're expecting Haniger to miss about 6 to 8 weeks. So most, if not all, of spring training, but presumably ready for the start of the regular season. So we'll see how that develops.
Yeah, and look, we all want Mitch to succeed. If your outlook on this season is that wins and losses don't really matter, then you can be as patient as you want with Mitch Haniger's recovery, right? He doesn't, if it's 6 to 8 weeks, but it ends up being bumped back, you don't have to, you know, bring your pitchforks down to the park and say, you said it was going to be 6 days. Let it be another month if it has to be. Let him heal up. Because if 2020 is just about the young players and letting them just kind of get a feel for the big leagues, I hate to say it, winning really doesn't matter. And if they do win, if they put together a couple of three-game winning streaks or they win 7 out of 10, that's great.
That's fine. That winning totally doesn't matter, because obviously as a sports fan, that's what you want.
But they're not competing
season,
for a playoff
they're not. With
spot,
this season in particular, it's not about winning games and racking up that total. It's about moments. Having those moments, having that spark, trying to see if what they have is the recipe they need for success moving forward. And if the people that they're counting on being a big part of this program are coming through
sure.
and are making those impressions. So you're going to see MLB debuts. You're going to see people have their first, you know, home run and first RBI and first everything in the big leagues. And you're going to see a lot of young guys learn, and there are going to be mistakes
yep.
that come with that. But there are also going to be those moments where something clicks. And as a fan, you watch and you think, this guy could be something. And you haven't really experienced that for a while with a team that had, you know, a lot of the same guys.
Yeah, usually in the last couple of years, the young guys that have come up haven't really been guys who are looked at as like saviors. It's like, all right, well, here's a prospect who's going to take so-and-so's spot because so-and-so is hurt
yeah.
right now. It's that kind of thing. You know, you look at some of these young players who are in the minors right now who we probably won't see for, well, in some cases, a long time. Julio Rodriguez, we're all very, very excited about him. Andy McKay this morning, their director of player person or director of scouting, told a great story about him, about how they watch him, and when he swings and misses, when he gets beat on a pitch, he laughs. He laughs because he's a confident guy who knows that on the next pitch or the next pitch after that, he's going to succeed. And they let him be that type of guy.
Mm-hmm.
They let a guy like Jared Kelnick be a confident guy. They don't want to take that away. That's part of developing these kids. It's not just, you know, hitting instructors saying, you know, put your make sure your elbow's up, kid. It's more about developing them as people and as players.
Well,
and
their attitude
them
is part of the prospect.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, Julio Rodriguez, Jared Kelnick, Evan White, we've heard this a number of times from Jerry DePoto, should be their opening day first baseman. I think he's the guy who we all have our eye on, at least I do, to start the season. He was given that six-year, $24 million contract. As a minor league player, that's pretty unusual, but they went ahead and they did it. I mean, you have to commit to somebody. I think that sends a nice message to him and to the other young players, as well as the fans. So he's probably the guy that I'm looking forward to the most. And I have to say, spring training is usually a really tedious time of year. I don't watch many of the games. This year I might.
Well, because this year you're watching for guys that might make a debut, you know, this year, second half of this year. It's not like these guys are super far out. Yeah, a guy like Julio Rodriguez, you know, I'd be surprised. He's really young. But again, Evan White, one of those five players in Baseball America's top 100, he is expected to be a day one guy in the start of the regular season. So there are guys. This isn't something that you should be waiting 4 years for. These are guys that will, you know, make their debut sooner rather than later.
I keep thinking back to what Mike told us yesterday when he was on. When we talk about the reimagining of the Mariners, he wanted to tear the whole thing down and rename the team.
He wanted new team colors.
Right. You know, as I thought it was an interesting idea, but really, and I'll just say it again, when you come down here to the ballpark, even when you just enter and you look around at, you know, what's up on the walls, the Mariners may not have the type of winning tradition that, say, the Yankees or whoever do. But this stadium has been around for about 20 years, and it is, in my opinion, one of the most beautiful ballparks, if not the best ballpark experience in all of Major League Baseball. And that in and of itself is kind of a tradition. When you come down here and you look around, I mean, we do have a lot of good memories here.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't stand out as playoff moments, World Series moments, but geez, if you're 15 years old now and your parents have been taking you here since you were a kid, I mean, that's what it's all about. It's about getting this city back into Mariner baseball, because we know from the late 90s and the early 2000s what a great baseball team or what an up-and-coming baseball team can do for this city. I mean, we see it with the Seahawks, and we've seen it here before. I hope, I mean, look, not every one of these players are going to turn out to be great. That's the shame of it, is that you look up the list of
yeah,
all
if
these
you're
young
a fan,
players.
You're getting
right.
you know, really
like,
excited.
It's like, well, what if Julio Rodriguez and Kelenic and all these guys are great,
though,
but Evan White isn't?
Yeah, yeah. I will say, though, that all three of those guys sound exceptionally promising. I know that the prospects sometimes don't work out, but this club is so excited about both Rodriguez and Kelnick, and obviously Evan White, but Rodriguez and Kelnick are the ones that they're really talking about because they're the ones people are asking about. And there is a kind of confidence and excitement that folks like McKay and DePoto have when they talk about them. And, you know, I know you could say, well, that's GM talk, and that's just any organization's going to talk about people they've invested in that way. But I think that for these two specific guys, they fit a vision that this organization has for what their future is going to be. And those are the type of guys that they want to mold around.
You know, when you think of this young group that's been playing together for a little while now, like at Arkansas, for example, they're already close. When they, like as guys, like there's a group of probably five or six of them, maybe even more. When they come up here, if I'm Kyle Seager or I'm a veteran player, I almost feel like I look at the young players and I say, you know what? It's your team. Like I've been here for a while, but I'm the outsider. Like this is your guys' time. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
That's how I would feel.
But, well, I guess only because so many young guys will be coming up in a single season.
Yeah.
Or a single season or two seasons, right? Like the first half of next season and trailing into the second half. But, yeah, I mean, I guess, although I think we can all assume that some of those guys will continue to be part of the organization for at least the next 2 years. I mean, it's...
I understand. I'm talking about just the personality of the club.
Yes.
Kyle Seager is not the personality of the club. D. Gordon is not the personality of the club. It's going to be these young guys. Look, maybe not, I'm not talking about opening day, but by the end of the season, it's going to look more and more like that. And if I'm Seager or I'm one of these older guys, Tom Murphy even, who we're going to be talking to at 12:30, I'm looking at them and I'm saying, it's your guys' time. This is your team. You know, I may not be here for the next 5 years, most of you guys should be.
It will be really weird. And I mean, metaphorically, right? The two of us, and I know you mentioned this, are out here in front of a field that's being redone. And you kind of, it feels like a, you know, from the bottom up, like really scraping everything down. So it will be a weird feeling for the veterans that have been here.
Our playoff coverage, by the way, when we get to some NFL today, is brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. Right now, I got three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
All right, we got some bad news yesterday regarding a former NFL superstar, Antonio Brown. I can't say I'm terribly surprised by this. Oh, there's a warrant out for his arrest for battery. He allegedly attacked some people that were in a moving truck out in front of his house. You know, he's been in so much trouble, Stacey, over the past year or so. What do you think the end game for him is?
Man, I really hope it's not with kind of a sad, like, jail or prison time situation. I think when he went to Oakland, you were kind of hoping, okay, there's been a lot of drama here, but hopefully he can find a way to turn it around. Maybe it was a mix of a toxic personality in an environment that wasn't working for him anymore, but it just became more and more uncontrollable. And it just became someone where you'd see former players, you know, tweeting about it, even today, tweeting about it and saying, you know, it's all fun to kind of talk about it and joke about it. But this is someone who, like, I kind of hope he gets the help he needs because he's just destroying his life.
Do you think he's mentally ill?
No, I mean, I don't know, but I think that Antonio Brown seems like someone who is incredibly talented, has been incredibly talented his entire life, and perhaps because of that has benefited from getting away with a lot of stuff. And
I guess what's weird about it, though, is that he's been in the league since, I think, about 2010.
Yeah.
For the first 6 or 7 years of his career, you never heard a peep out of him. You
either,
know, you didn't even
either
really know who he
was.
Props
to Mike Tomlin, who did a fantastic job with that, or something more recent has happened in his life.
Well, that's what I mean.
And that could be part of it too, right? I don't want to be armchair psychologist and speculate about someone, but he's clearly not in a good place. This guy needs some help.
You don't want to play armchair psychologist?
No, it's normally my favorite game.
Next.
Number two.
How much does a young player, we saw this with Kyle Lewis last year in September with the Mariners, how much does a young player have to produce before the fans get a little excited and a little confidence in him?
You mean, okay, so how much do you have to see from someone specifically with baseball?
I don't mean in a clinical way. Yeah, in baseball. I don't mean in a clinical way. I just mean you look at him and you say, all right, that guy's got something.
I think if you're dominating at your level, so if you're not just like popping up and, you know, higher than would people expect in the prospect rankings. Mm-hmm. Like having Julio Rodriguez is, what was he, eight or 11, one of them. Having him in there is, I think, exciting for a lot of fans. But I think also seeing guys move to the next level in advance sooner than expected, I think is exciting for a lot of people.
I think when I saw Kyle Lewis at the major league level last year, I mean, not everybody's going to be an all-star baseball player, Stacey, but some guys have it.
No,
and some guys don't.
Everyone will be an all-star.
Well, right, but I mean, sometimes you can tell that a non-all-star at least belongs at the big league level when he's a young player, right? I mean, Kyle Seager hasn't been an all-star every year of his career, but I mean, he at least looks like, obviously, he belongs. He's been here since 2011. And you kind of got a sense of that even when he was a young player. Kyle Lewis, I got that sense about last year. There are other guys who, you know, they come up to the big leagues, they tear it up for a month or two, and then all of a sudden they lose their swing or something happens, and then they're back in the minors, and you can't really predict that stuff. Injuries take over, whatever it is. But there are certain times where you point at a guy and you say, all right, he's at least got it. I think he belongs here.
Yeah, and I mean, the good thing you can say about that is with the outline of the organization being very publicly, hey, we're rebuilding, it sounds like one focus of theirs is to avoid rushing guys. So even though I'm talking about guys advancing sooner than expected, like by all, you know, accounts, Kelnick is on an advanced timeline. Mm-hmm. But they're not rushing them, and I think sometimes that's what contributes to that loss of confidence in the bigs.
Next.
Number three.
We keep hearing about Jared Kelnick and how confident he is. When I hear that over and over and over, I get the sense that he's borderline arrogant, which I love for a baseball player. Do you think that baseball needs more players like that?
A little bit. I'm thinking of watching, was it the World Series or I think it was the World Series. When did Juan Soto throw the bat to?
Oh, that was the World Series.
That was the World
After
Series.
After Alex Bregman hit the home run, he responded.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I loved that. And I know some people were like, this is bad decorum. I don't like it. But I thought I absolutely am 100% in favor of attitude in baseball. Yeah. Carry the bat all the way around with you on a home run and throw it as hard as you can into right field when you're done.
Well, if you can avoid hurting someone, I guess. So. Yeah, I've always said that, like, you watch NFL, an interception, a touchdown, you get the group celebration, and that's fine. But I feel like football could use a little bit less of that. Baseball could use more of it.
But not as much as football? You don't want guys getting a home run and coming around the bases and then posing for a fake photo?
Maybe not every time.
Okay.
Because every time there's an interception, they do that, right?
Yeah.
In the NFL. I don't know if I need, like, you know, it's first inning in April, here comes Kyle Lewis, and then we get a group celebration.
Or like a group celebration for just a double play in the middle.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not entirely. But you know what? With a young team, I guess let him go out there. I'm sure I'm being called out on the text line right now for being.
I won't tell you.
For being Mr. No Fun. But yeah.
No, you're Mr. More Fun right now.
I am.
You want more fun.
For baseball. Yeah. Again, football. Look, the only thing about football.
I want chaos in both leagues.
Chaos?
Yeah.
You want guys fighting each other?
Yeah. No, I can't say that.
Again, it's like anything else. If you have too much of it, it'll just get old.
I would never want to see a fight, someone like running over from the mound and fighting someone in person. That's ridiculous. Who would be calling for that?
You.
A monster.
You would.
Maybe.
A sociopath.
I mean,
hey, what is it about running around the bases with a bat in hand that is specifically offensive
it was carrying the bat.
Right, but what about that? Look, if you
hit
a home
run. I don't
know, because
there's so many unspoken rules of baseball. As someone who covers football primarily for a living, and obviously baseball too for my job, but there are, I think when you cover baseball later, there are a lot of unspoken rules and a kind of decorum that it takes you a while to pick up on. And baseball is just one of those traditional sports where there's so many unspoken things.
But some of them you can understand. If a guy hits a home run and points at the other team's dugout, and, like, you know, does some whatever gesture, you can understand how that's offensive. If you run around the bases with bat in hand, that doesn't seem like it's the worst
thing in
the world.
Curtis, do you know why?
Why everybody loves emotion and just all that in baseball? I think just because it's been decade and decade and decade of just boringness of, you know, guys, don't you dare show your personality. And now,
how
it's
dare
finally,
you?
Yeah, now it's just finally like, all right, now we can see some personality of these guys. Because, I mean, that's certainly something that the NFL and NBA don't lack. And they're having plenty of success at a national level. Baseball could learn a thing or two from those guys.
It's, I mean, I watch NBA, and I think the action of the NBA game kind of lends itself to that type of thing. You can get a quick celebration after a dunk or something. It's almost the natural thing to do in that situation. But in baseball, you know, there's not as much action. So when there is, and everybody's, the action stops, like on a home run, everybody pays attention, and it's, you know, I'm pointing at the dugout or something.
I think
like
there's a big, like, respect thing. Like, be humble and be respectful. But sometimes you want a little bit of, if I'm turning 21 and I'm playing in a World Series, I'm going to have some attitude. Sorry.
I guess so. If I were 21 in a World Series, though, I'd be, look, I mean, I'm not Justin Dunn. I'm not one of these guys who's had mostly success throughout their lives. But, man, I'd be too nervous to be doing that.
Well, yeah, but it's because
you would.
I don't know. No, I would, because I'm not used to six. I think I'd be too worried about jinxing it. But if I'm a really, I don't know. It's, I think it's fun to see. I mean, obviously, no one wants someone who's obnoxious and awful. Mm-hmm. But I like some attitude in sports. I like seeing confident players. It's more fun to cover. If you're a fan, it's more fun to watch. Those guys give better quotes, selfishly speaking.
Like if T.O. played baseball,
oh god,
how would that look?
Oh man,
like I don't even, it's tough to even imagine what that looks like.
I feel like I talked myself into a corner with this one. How do I defend this?
I mean, if Jared Kelnick or, you know, turns out to be that, I guess, again, I'll stand by it. I think that that's a good thing for baseball. I mean, T.O., whether you loved him or hated him, ultimately was a good thing for football.
Maybe it's what the Mariners need. I don't know. Maybe, obviously, we haven't seen a lot of these prospects so far, but, you know, maybe you do need a change.
What if the Mariners start out 13-2 again?
Then
is everybody going to get excited? Would you be excited again, or would you, because you know what that led to last year, would you be like, eh?
I think this is a year where you already know that it's, you're not playing to be in contention. You're playing for development.
Right. All right, coming up next, Tom Murphy should be joining us. He may be coming in at 12:45, Mariners catcher. I want to get back to the Mitch Haniger injury news next. We'll talk about that on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
Agra's already. The 1-0 pitch to Murphy. Swung on. Fly ball into center field. That's deep. Going back. Reynolds to the warning track. Looking up. Goodbye, baseball. Lewis and Murphy go back to back here in the top half of the fourth inning. For Tom Murphy, his 18th home run of the year. This one sliced over into right center above the wall and beyond it. And the Mariners now lead the Pirates 4-0. How about that?
How about that indeed? 18 home runs, 40 RBIs. He hit .273 in just 75 games last year. I'm talking about Tom Murphy, who joins us now, Mariners catcher. I got to, Tom, last year, maybe not the best year from a wins and losses standpoint, but you were one of the great, great stories of last year. Just how did it feel coming out of that?
You know, it felt like a dream come true, really. It kind of felt like the start of my big league career in a way. You know, I was super appreciative of the opportunity over here to be on a team that was, I guess, more about development than it was necessarily win-losses, which is something that I needed for my career myself. So it was a huge, you know, kind of a, I guess, bonus to be here in that environment.
Where do you feel like you still need to develop?
You know, I couldn't point to one thing specifically.
Yeah.
You know, I really, truly want to be the best catcher in the game, you know, and until I get to that point, there's plenty of things to work on.
Was your experience in Colorado such that you just didn't, did you not get the type of, I guess, development that you needed there? You feel like you fit in better here?
You know, I guess development is an interesting word in baseball. You take a look at it on the minor league side, and there's plenty of ways you can develop and that sort of thing. But, you know, you look at the mental side and the environment of the big league game, and it's just different. You know, it truly is. Being able to put aside all the distractions that come with being a major league baseball player and going out and performing the way that you do in the minor leagues takes time for some people, and I was one of those people for sure. And it's something I still work on very hard because I know the other side of it as well. You know, not performing at the big league level is one of the worst feelings in the world. You know, so getting to the point where you're comfortable here is as valuable as anything.
So this is obvious. This organization has undergone a reimagining. There's a lot of young players that we're going to be seeing this year. I mean, you're 28 years old, so you're definitely not an old player, but you've been in the league for a while now. Do you feel like it's your job to kind of usher these kids in and take a leadership role? Like, what do you see your role as on this team?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny you say that because in a way, my career went from being a rookie to a veteran in almost a year, you know, type of setting. And I'm trying to grasp that the best I can, especially at the catching position with all of our young pitchers coming up. I realize that that's probably the biggest importance of me on the team is being a leader for those younger pitchers to where we can establish them in a quicker amount of time so that this rebuild doesn't take 2 or 3 years. It takes 1 year, and we can add pieces along the way that hopefully make us better.
And you're a catcher, which is a leadership position anyway, right? I mean, even if you were younger than you were, you're probably expected to provide leadership for a lot of these guys.
Absolutely. And then, you know, being drafted in 2012, now I have, you know, we're coming up on 10 years of being a professional baseball player, and that's taught me a lot of things that hopefully I can kind of give along the way and be there for my guys.
Tom, I don't know if you've heard, but there's a kind of sign-stealing controversy that's happening. So I actually wanted to ask you about sign-stealing just from kind of a non-connected to the Astros point of view. So for fans that haven't played as much or are unfamiliar, how can you tell when someone has clued in on your signs, and what do you do? What kind of communication do you have with the pitcher? So what goes on for specifically the catcher in that case?
Yeah, you know, I'm obviously always aware of what's going on with base runners out there on the base and coaches in the boxes and that sort of thing. You know, when you have somebody on base that's like intently looking at you as a catcher, there's no reason for that other than trying to see your signs, right? I mean, that's baseball 101.
You never have a moment of like, this guy's so obsessed with me right now.
What's he looking?
What do you want?
I hope that's not the scenario. But yeah, like I was saying, it's one of those things where that's happened throughout baseball history, right? Is trying to steal signs at second base or whatever. But, you know, I've kind of taken a backseat to, you know, I guess the whole situation right now until everything's played out. You know, and to me, it hasn't all played out. We don't have all the information of exactly what's going on. We've always prepared to protect ourselves as catchers and pitchers. And that's what we'll continue to do. And if that takes, you know, more mound visits or wherever, that's what we do.
Just theoretically, technology being involved, is it a big deal to players if that is the case? If signs are being stolen, like for methods other than a guy just standing on second base?
We were talking about if there's like ethical cheating.
Yeah, I mean, like we know that that's been going on for 150 years in baseball. Yeah. But this other stuff, I mean, how do players feel about that? Are there different opinions or?
Yeah, it probably goes back to the unwritten rules of baseball, right? I mean, we all kind of have anecdotal information as baseball players that we use to kind of guide ourselves through ethics and morals of the game. But when you go outside of that, that's when it's going to really kind of blow up like it has, in my opinion. So, you know, I don't think anybody's open to excessive forms of cheating. I think that's pretty well known amongst players, and I think that the best thing we can do is as players as whole is put it off to the side altogether.
How's your relationship developing with some of the guys in the rotation?
It's been great. You know, and that's obviously something that started last year. Thankfully, we were able to get, you know, quite a few young guys up here to get their experience, not only at the big league level, like I was talking about developing here, but also creating a relationship between Austin and I. And, you know, that type of experience and that communication is what's going to guide us throughout the year. I have to be open to these guys. They have to know who I am personally, and I have to know them as well. So hopefully going into spring training, we have, you know, much more brotherhood type connection than actual teammate connection.
Talking to Mariners catcher Tom Murphy, what did you do this offseason? Anything fun away from baseball?
I'm kind of a homebody. You know, anytime I have to myself that's not for my family or the sport, goes right to hunting. I enjoy hunting more than anything in this world outside of baseball and family time. So I spend my time in the woods a lot.
Where do you like to hunt?
So I live in upstate New York, just north of Syracuse. There's a region called the Adirondacks, the Adirondack region. That's very near and dear to my heart. That's where I like to and spend my time. So anytime I can escape up there, it just feels at home.
Wait, what do you hunt when you're up there?
Whitetail and black bear.
I don't know why I thought turkeys.
We have quite
turkeys.
A few.
I don't know. That was my first thought. I feel like there'd be turkeys over there.
Definitely.
I'm from that area of the country, too, actually. Sometimes when you're driving around, I'm from Connecticut, turkeys will just walk across the street.
Shut up.
I'm serious.
What?
Like a whole line of them. You don't shoot at them.
Well, no.
You just gotta
get out of here.
You just got to wait a second. But you have to wait for them to cross.
I just can't believe that. I've never seen a turkey in the wild. I didn't know.
Oh, really? No. Oh,
maybe
yeah.
They're just East Coasters.
I guess so.
Big slam on your car. I'm walking here.
So are you looking forward to spring training? You're getting this underway. I mean, I imagine as you guys get closer to it, I mean, what kind of preparation do you do on your own for that?
Yeah. I think the part I love about this game is actually preparing for it more than anything. I enjoy, both the physical and mental side of the preparation. I don't really take time off in the off season. I get right back to it just because I value the time that I have getting better at baseball. And once it's all said and done, that's what I'm probably going to miss the most is actually preparing for something, getting ready for the long haul. To me, that's where, us as baseball players, it's where we make our money is in the off season and not wasting that time.
Have you had a chance to talk to a few of the young guys? I know that a lot of them have been in different leagues and in the minors, but have you had a chance to interact at all with, obviously Justin Dunn was up here, but Jared Kelnick, Julio Rodriguez, or have you not been able to talk to those guys yet?
I have actually. We had a leadership type summit in December where we got together, a few players and coaches and staff from the organization got together and went over kind of our cultural changes that we're going to try to implement this year as an organization. Got to meet many of those guys, and obviously they're all dedicated to the craft. They're all exciting prospects. They all have their things that they do well, and hopefully we'll see more of them this year, and it's nice to get to meet them early on.
We hear a lot about culture from the Seahawks across the street there. We're hearing it a lot more now with the Mariners. Is that something that other baseball teams put as much of an emphasis on as, say, a team like the Mariners are right now?
I think you take a look at the really good teams, and there's a very noticeable kind of credence, a motto that they have or whatever that they live by. And you kind of look at any World Series or Super Bowl champion, any of those types of teams, they have very clearly and defined systems. And I think that's what we're working towards is kind of making our own definition this year and taking it and running with it.
Mariners catcher Tom Murphy, I mean, last year, what a pleasant surprise that was just to have you as part of the team. Was there a moment where you realized, I got this?
No.
It still hasn't hit. It might never hit.
I hope it doesn't.
Well, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. All right, well, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, guys.
All right, we'll be back in a second. We're going to talk more about Mitch Haniger. Plus, Stacy's going to have something up on 710sports.com about the Seahawks and some of the questions they are facing. We'll talk about that next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
And we're down here at T-Mobile Park today. Pleasure to be down here for the Mariners pre-spring training media luncheon. We're looking at a grassless T-Mobile Park right now. There's literally no grass. It's just a bunch of sod out there.
Well,
in the
and it's a guy
infield.
Kind of doing circles like what's that thing when you have a thing of rocks and you scrape it and then you make designs on it?
What?
You know what I'm talking about?
No.
It's a thing where you have rocks and you scrape the rocks and you make little designs. A Zen garden. That's what they're doing to the field right now, just for people that are listening.
It looks like he's just out there like burning Brody's. It's like,
no.
Hey, it's snowing. Let's go rip some donuts.
Hey, let me tell you something. That's not what a rock garden is or a Zen garden is, and that's not what they're doing out there.
That's what they're doing. Then tell me why all of these lines are perfectly straight, and now he's going through them making circles.
That's just for his own use.
Missing a bonsai tree out there, right?
There's no bonsai
tree. Yeah, they're trimming bonsai.
That's what it looks like.
You know, in seventh grade, I had to do a project for science on a bonsai tree, or bonsai as it was known. You know what? You know what grade I got?
C minus.
A plus.
Zero.
Oh wow!
I got a zero.
Out of how much?
Out of 100. I just didn't do it right at all.
Wait, like, I didn't even get. It's a pine tree.
I didn't get any credit for it whatsoever. It was pretty sad.
Tom, not to brag, but I was a straight A student.
Yeah,
in elementary school.
I've heard that many times.
Yeah.
We had a little breaking news this morning. Shortly before we took the air, Mitch Haniger had surgery for his quote unquote injury, that ruptured testicle. God. Well, every time I think about that, like, I feel like I'm in pain. That has got to be one of the worst pains there is.
Yeah.
And evidently he's been feeling it for like 6 months.
Oh, good God. I feel bad for him. But anyway, he sustained yet another injury during the surgery to his core. So he's going to have another 6 to 8 weeks rehab of that before he's expected back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about athletes and some of the rehab they go through. It's not very often that we as fans actually consider what that rehab is. And I don't know specifically what Mitch is going through, but, you know, I remember talking to Walter Thurman years ago when he had already been injured like twice, and he told us specifically if he got hurt again, he would think about retiring.
Yeah.
Because the rehab was just too much to take. You know, I mean, he ended up being healthy for a while after that. And then he got hurt again.
It's a lot, though. It's not just, I had knee surgery and then I got rest and I came in and did stretches and I was cool. It's like, no, you spend like 80% of your time recovering, 20% doing whatever. And you have to, I mean, think of like the gross things you have to do. Like, you have to have scar tissue removed and all kinds of stuff that you don't see when you're a fan watching the game.
Why do you think I didn't have my hacky sack injury fixed?
Because you didn't want to deal with the recovery.
I didn't want to deal
with
the recovery.
You just threw your career away.
Right, now I just walk with a limp.
You could have been a professional hacky sack player, but instead, it's like Jake when he tells the story of how he's so afraid of needles, then instead of getting a shot on the sidelines, he played with a broken rib.
Nah, that's all right.
That's okay. I'll deal with the pain of a broken rib.
What do you got going up on 710sports.com?
I have an article. It's on 710sports.com right now. It's called Key Questions the Seahawks Face Once the NFL offseason begins. So this is really kind of about the immediate timeline the Seahawks have heading into the offseason. So it looks at what's next for them, players that are in consideration for free agency, who is going to be a free agent, how much it could cost to re-sign some of those big names, and whether or not Seattle can afford to do that. So the main free agent I look at is obviously Jadeveon Clowney, but let's get into what's just immediately next. And that's obviously the Pro Bowl on Sunday. What's immediately next is the Pro Bowl, where Pete Carroll and his coaching staff are going to be coaching the NFC team. Baltimore Ravens coaching staff is coaching the AFC team. We've got Jake out there, and he'll update us later and what he's seeing and hearing. So let's get past that. You're going to need to start looking at the free agents that they currently have hitting the market. There's 22 unrestricted free agents in total. And then there are obviously people that they'll be interested in signing from other teams, but we don't know who that's going to be yet. So as far as the 22 free agents, you can track all of them. We have a separate article on 710sports.com that I link to in that article if you want just an ongoing tracker that you can save and just revisit. But the bigger names include Jadeveon Clowney, Jaron Reed, Jermaine Ifedi, George Fant, Mike Iupati, linebacker Michael Kendricks, and then Quentin Jefferson. So your two biggest areas of need, I think, and some fans might disagree, but I think your two biggest areas of need are going to be on opposite sides of the line of scrimmage, your defensive line and your offensive line. That's also where you have the biggest concentration of free agents leaving. So I think of all of those guys, and I'm not alone here, that Clowney is a favorite to get a deal done first, should they agree to re-sign him. So the question that I always see is, A, how much would it cost to re-sign Clowney? And B, how much money do they have to spend, just in total? So
do you think that Clowney would like to just be back here?
It's a good question. So Clowney was asked about that, and he said that he wants to just play for a contender. Did he say he wants to return to Seattle? No, but Pete Carroll.
But they are a contender.
They are a contender.
We have to say that.
Yes, yes. I think that the thing is NFL.com, and they're not alone here, listed their top 20 free agents hitting the market. Clowney's number 4. So the thing is that there are going to be teams that can't afford to re-sign him. He's going to command one of the most expensive defensive deals on the market. but there are going to be other contenders that can. So the Seahawks are going to have some competition there. However, when Bob David Moore talked to Dwayne Brown, he said, I don't have to tell him anything to convince him to come back. I don't have to give him a sales pitch. He already experienced everything that this organization is going to be about.
Right.
So he knows what he's getting when he comes back and signs up. I think he liked it. And that's me resting my case, is what Dwayne Brown kind of had to say about that. So as far as what it'll cost, SpotTrack, which I used for this, you can also use Over the Cap, projected him at either a 6-year, $120 million deal or a 4-year deal worth around $77 million. Either way, it'll cost the Seahawks about $20 million per year to re-sign Clowney.
Do you think that he's their only option at pass rush? I mean, I keep hearing people talk about doing what the Packers did last year with Za'Darius and Preston Smith, but I don't know that those guys are those types of players, two of them, are necessarily available.
I think that's what you have to worry about, right? Is he is the best defensive end, I think, that's going to be available. There are weaknesses to his game. He performs much better against the run than he does against the pass or in pass rush. But he is still one of the best players out there. He finished with the second highest Pro Football Focus grade of his entire career. Don't look at just his sack numbers, because he performs better in other areas than do some of the other top paid players like Trey Flowers or Frank Clark.
Yeah, I said I wasn't buying that the other day, but for today I'm just going to rest.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. That's nice of you.
Yeah.
As far as whether or not Seattle can afford to do it, the Seahawks have, cap-wise, $60 million to spend. So, obviously, it's not just it's not like you're in high school and you get your first check and you're like, let's go to the mall, spending every cent today.
We're going to American Eagle, it is going to blow up.
Getting so many hoodies. No, they've still got to pay draft picks. You've got to extend some players you have, but they can certainly afford to re-sign Clowney should they choose to do that. That will be the most expensive deal. You're not going to have to pay $20 million for, you know, a left guard or an extra wide receiver or something. So that will be your priciest deal. They can afford to do it. It will limit them at other positions, but they're far from handicapped with spending and draft picks this year, which is kind of different than how it's been in years past. Last year, they entered the draft with 4 picks.
I think we know what Mariners pitcher Justin Dunn would spend $60 million of cap space on.
The vast majority of it, surely.
Yeah, he could find a way to spend that $60 million. He's going to tell us what that is next. 710 ESPN Seattle.